Today, we're starting a new series called Christian Rebranded. And there's a lot that we're going to get through over the next 8 weeks. I think it's going to be a really powerful time. Our young adults actually did this study last year in a small group. And when they finished, they said, man, you've got to do this as a church. This is a great study. There's so much in here. So this is week one where we're going to have a big picture view of what the whole series is about. But to start off with, I guess the rebranding exercise is that the word Christian can be kind of hard to define. Now I'll explain, because if you see this picture of Queenslanders, you know that these guys are Queensland supporters, right? You know that next Wednesday night, when you know you sit and watch your Origin, if you're wearing maroon, if you're wearing kind of like a reddy, you know, dark red colour, then you are supporting Queensland. There's no doubting, there's no thinking. And if you're wearing blue, then you know we don't. Yeah, sit down, Lou. We don't want you here. No, we love you, just not next Wednesday night. So we know what a Queenslander is, right? Like, it's pretty easily defined. Someone who's wearing that is a Queenslander. But we also know that someone who's enthusiastic about computers, kind of, as soon as they see a new piece of technology or something shiny and black with neon lights, they start drooling. And you know that they are enthusiastic about computers, okay? So we know what that kind of person looks like. And I've been learning over this last week, because I've been with a lot of young guys and young adults, what a hipster is. And apparently, we can kind of say a hipster is someone who's wearing kind of weird hat and kind of big thick glasses and is wearing a beard. So if you're sporting a beard today, you're a hipster, maybe. But then they told me, these guys, if you admit to being a hipster, then you're not a hipster. So that was maybe, it's a hard one to define. But what about if we ask, well, what is a Christian? You know, if we kind of went around the church and said, well, how do you define a Christian? I think the explanations we'd have around this room would be a bit diverse. But then imagine if you went out to the streets. You went to the Queen Street Mall and you did a vox pop and you went and interviewed people and said, what is a Christian? I bet that you would get a much broader view of what this word Christian means. I think you'd get a lot of people answering different things, and you'd kind of get to this point of going, wow, this word Christian is so diverse and different that maybe we need to kind of shift it somehow. Because some people, when they hear this word Christian, they'll say, oh yeah, I was baptized as a baby, I'm a Christian. Or others in that same kind of group might say, I was baptized and confirmed, that means that I am a Christian. I fit into this mold. And then other people will say, no, well, I was baptized as an adult, I was baptized as a believer. So that's my kind of mark of being a Christian. And we know we're in a Baptist church, right? So we own baptism. We got that word down pat. So we must be right around baptism, because we say Baptist on the big sign. So we must have something right about baptism. So maybe we're the right kind of Christians. Or then there are others who say, oh, I went to church once. Or I go to church once a year, and that makes me a Christian. That's enough. If, you know, as long as I go through the doors, I get my entry ticket, and I sit down once a year, that means that ticks a box that says I'm a Christian. Or maybe it was, I grew up in a Christian family, or I grew up in a Christian home. Or I grew up in a Christian country. I'm from a Christian country, so therefore I'm a Christian. Other people will kind of own their denomination and say, well, I'm from the Catholic Church, and we were the church when we were the only church for 1500 years. We're the first church. We're the real church. And so they would say, well, we're true Christians because we're from the first church. And Catholic means universal. So surely that means everyone's kind of part of us. And then the Protestants would say, no, well, we saw all of the problems, and so we wanted to get out of the Catholics. So we're the Protestants, so we're the true church, because, you know, we've got the right kind of doctrine. So that makes us the right group. And then there are others that kind of go, yeah, but we care for the poor. We're the justice people, and that's what Jesus cared for the poor, and he was all good with justice. So that makes us the real Christians. And then other people would kind of look at this same thing and say, well, we follow the exact words of the Bible. We're literal Christians. You know, we're literal Bible interpreters. So that makes us the real Christians. Can you see how this starts to get broad? Can you see how this starts to get big and inclusive, all these people who say they are Christians? And then someone will say, well, I made a decision once. I was a Christian. You know, I went on a camp or I went forward in a church service and I prayed the prayer. But, you know, that was something I did. I was a Christian. And then there are other groups that say, well, no, you can't be a was Christian. It's kind of like once you're saved, you're always saved. And so that's their kind of Christian is an always Christian. And it can be kind of confusing to kind of look at these different groups of Christians. And then there are some people who kind of look at this word Christian and say, yeah, but you're a Christian until you commit a certain kind of sin. And then you have to pray again, and then once you pray and get rid of that sin, then you're a Christian again. And so you remember that time where you were driving home after a date and you did things with that girl that God wouldn't really be pleased with. You're kind of reflecting on that and driving really slowly to make sure that you made it home so you could get in front of God and pray. You're like, I don't want to have an accident here and die and then find out that I still have that sin. So you want to make sure that you pray out that sin. So there are some people who the word Christian means someone who is perfect and pure. And so they commit after recommit after recommit. They have to keep recommitting their lives to God because they keep stuffing up and sinning. And so they have to keep committing and committing and committing so that they're pure when they die. So that is what they believe a Christian is. And then I bet that there would be some for whom, if you ask them what a Christian is, they would kind of define it like this. They would say, a Christian is a judgmental, homophobic moralist who think they are the only ones going to heaven and secretly love the fact that everyone else is going to hell. Whoa, I'll read that out again. Some people think that the word Christian means a judgmental, homophobic moralist who think they're the only ones going to heaven and secretly love the fact that everyone else is going to hell. Anyone ever known a Christian like that? Yeah, a couple of people. When we look at what a Christian is, you can start to see it has got so broad that you can have a Christian in so many different places that they can claim, yeah, I'm a Christian because I, you know, whatever. That it's almost undefined. It's so broad that we just can't narrow it down and say, well, what then is a Christian? And the reality is that none of these things that we've kind of put up here is in the Bible stated of what a Christian is. That's not what a Christian is. None of those things that we've been talking about. Actually, when you go to the Bible, the word Christian really isn't defined. We use it all the time, but biblically, there's only three places where that word is even defined, even talked about. And so we're going to have a look at a few of those today. But just to kind of get your head around this, this word Christian was actually a derogatory term for the early church. They started out being called the Nazarene sect by outsiders because Jesus was from Nazareth, and so probably local people within Israel were kind of like, oh, they're the Nazarenes. They're that weird sect off to the side, the Nazarene sect. And then later in the early church, they were followers of the Way. And so you read through the Way seemed to be the name that they were called because they would say that Jesus is the way to get to heaven. And so that was what they were known as. But later on, as the Christianity kind of grew, they started to become known as Christians. But the church, the people within the church didn't ever call themselves Christians. It was only outsiders that called them that. They looked in and they saw, who are these people? And what normally happened was that they heard this guy that they followed was Jesus Christ or in their name, Yeshua Christos. And Yeshua was the Hebrew name for Jesus. And then Christos is the Greek. It's actually a Greek translation of the word Messiah. And so they've translated it to be Christ. And so they're hearing that this guy's name, that these people, these weird people follow, is named Jesus Christ. And they call them the Christ followers. But they didn't do it in a way that was like, oh, they follow, you know, Christ. He seems like a great guy. They were like, oh, those people, those Christ ones, those Christ followers. You know, it was a real derogatory. Actually, they thought that Jesus' last name was Christ. That Mary's first name was Mary and her last name was Christ. And Jesus' brother James was James Christ. That was what they thought that it meant. And so they would call them the Christ ones, the Christ followers, the Christians. And then we have the first kind of time we hear about this word Christian is in the book of Acts. And we've been looking at Acts, if you were with us, over the last couple of months. And we've heard about this, the church in Jerusalem, where pretty much all of the Christians were, suffered persecution. And we can really see the hand of God in this, because everyone who were Christians scattered and went throughout the empire. And as they scattered, they went and they told people about the faith that they had in Jesus. And so a group went up to Antioch in the north, and then they started telling people, their neighbors, their friends, about Jesus. And people, it just like Christianity exploded. Heaps of people came to follow Jesus, and this group grew. And so the church in Jerusalem said, man, we've got to send some leadership up there, some pastors. And so they sent Barnabas up there to speak to the church. And then he went, well, man, there are just too many people here. And so he went and got Saul, who was later called Paul, but he went and got Saul because he was a great teacher, and he brought him. And then in Acts 11, verse 26, he says, so for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church and taught great numbers of people. The disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. So that's the first time that people were called Christians. That was the first time that name was recorded in the Bible. So that's what we have. We have Christians there. The next spot we hear about this word Christians is later in the book of Acts. Paul has gone and done these missionary journeys, which we talked about. He did these different missionary journeys, went around, told people about Jesus. Incredible success. Then his way down to Jerusalem, he had this sense, people told him, you will actually leave Jerusalem in chains. And Paul said, well, I know that that's the direction that God has for me. So he went down to Jerusalem. While he was there, he was imprisoned. He said to the Romans, no, I'm a Roman citizen. I shouldn't be just put to death by the Jewish religious people who didn't like how Christianity was growing. And so he said, save me, Romans. And so they took him, the Roman guard took him, and moved him away to a different city where he awaited trial. And this kind of went on for a fair while. Finally, he got an audience with two governors, Agrippa and Felix. And between these two, they were kind of debating whether they should let him go or send him up to Caesar to be heard by the emperor. And in chapter 26 of Acts, verse 28, Paul, he's speaking, he's giving a defense for why he's been imprisoned. And Paul, he always takes the opportunity. Whenever there's an opportunity to speak, he doesn't just say, please let me go. He's like, well, let me tell you about Jesus. And he starts this evangelistic sermon to give to Agrippa and Felix. And so then Agrippa said to Paul, do you think that in such a short time you can persuade me to be a Christian? You know, he wasn't saying that in a positive light. He was like, a Christian? One of you? Do you think that you could persuade me? You know, he was saying. I mean, maybe he was starting to think, oh, some of this I understand, but he was saying that in a way that was kind of abusive. It was a down word. It wasn't a build up word. It was kind of like how maybe 20 years ago, if you were called a geek, that would not be a positive thing, right? If you're a geek, it'd be like, oh, that hurts my feelings. I just like computers and, you know, wearing smart clothes. And but now we have cars that drive around. Now the people who love computers are now, you know, doing really well off computer businesses. And now there's cars that drive around with computer geek written on the side and proud guys driving around who come and fix your computer. So that word has gone from a derogatory word to something that we understand. Okay, well, that's a good thing to be a geek because, you know, you can get a good job. I remember when I moved over from England when I was a little kid, and people used to call me something. Guess what they called me? Pom, yeah. So, and that's a derogatory term. But that's one that's been flipped around the other way. It's like originally it was prisoners of Her Majesty's, Pom, and they got shipped over here because they stole bread or something in England, and so they came over here to be convicts. And so really it's the people here that should be called Poms. And not the people from England, I think. I'm just saying, do you think? Maybe. So that was one of these ones that's kind of like just a normal word that's been used now as a derogatory word in the wrong way, I might add. So here, Agrippa is kind of going, do you think I would be a Christian? One of you? And Paul, he's great. All the time, he just comes up with great answers. Oh, You know, you kind of wish sometimes that you were that good and quick and sharp. Paul replied, short time or long, I pray to God that not only you, but all who are listening to me today may become what I am, except for these chains. Ah, oh, isn't that good? Isn't Paul just rich when he says that? He doesn't kind of go on the attack. What? Christian? I'm a follower of Jesus. Or, you know, whatever. Like, define what Christian. You know, he's just, man, short or long, I'll be here all week. You know, I'll be here all month. I'll stay a year. He was there for years. But it's like, I'll keep coming back and talking to you because however long it takes, I want you to be just like I am. Except for I don't want you to be chained up. We also have some outside of the Bible places where this word Christian comes up. And one of the guys who is a historian around the later first century, he wrote about the different emperors that were ruling over Rome or the Roman Empire. And one guy's name was Tacitus. And Tacitus, we have parts of his writings, and one of them speaks about the emperor Nero. Now, Nero did something that was really unpopular to do. If you're ever in charge of something, this is what you shouldn't do. He did something to the city of Rome. Does anyone know what he did to Rome? Burn it down, right. So it's kind of common-ish knowledge. People have heard about this guy Nero as being someone who persecuted Christians, but before that he was the guy who burnt down his city. He had a great idea of urban renewal, you know, knocking down some old buildings, putting up some new. He had great plans for a small section of the city, but what he didn't think about was that his way of, he didn't call in the Dean brothers to demolish, he kind of just lit a fire. And thought, I'll just burn down these buildings and then we can start our process of putting in some new, you know, three-story high-rise or whatever. And so he starts burning and the fire just takes over and before you know it, half of the city of Rome is burnt to the ground. So serious problem that Nero had. And so he thought, well, you know, this clearly isn't going to be popular for the people. They've lost their homes and their businesses and they're really upset. They want someone to be able to look to hate for this. And so Tacitus, in 64 AD writes that consequently to get rid of the report that Nero burned down his own city, Nero fastened the guilt and inflicted the most exquisite tortures on a class hated for their abominations called Christians by the populace. So the people called them Christians. And then he goes on to explain about Christ, or Christos, their leader. And he said, who suffered the extreme penalty during the reign of Tiberius at the hands of one of the procurators, Pontius Pilate. So here's a guy writing, 64 AD, he's writing about something that happened 30-ish years before then, in a different area, different province in the empire. So he's directing everyone, says he's that guy who was killed on a cross by Pontius Pilate. And that connects with what we've got in the Bible, right? Extra biblical, outside. This guy's not a Christian at all. He looks down and uses that word as Christian. They were called that by the people. They didn't like them, so they called them Christians. And so he's saying that what the biblical account of Jesus going to the cross is true. That's good, right? That gives us some kind of like, wow, the Bible, we've got some backup proof here for what the New Testament says is the truth, which is great. But again, we come back to this reality that the word Christian was really used to be able to describe them, this group of people. It wasn't actually taken on by the Christians for a long period after that. So their focus wasn't on that. The word that they used in their church circles was actually much more fearsome than the word Christian. The word that they used was actually one that should kind of make us be a little bit wary and concerned, because the word they used was defined in the Bible. It's a word that they knew well, especially the people of Jewish descent, because they had heard and had seen these people their whole lives. And that's the word disciple. Dun, 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 dun. The word disciple is defined in the Bible. There are a lot of proof and evidence. You see, for those people of that day, they saw what a disciple was someone who gave up their rights to learn and follow after and serve their rabbi, their teacher, their master. So they would choose to say, I don't want to follow the path that I thought I would have, but instead I will follow this rabbi listen to his teachings, and in time, I will take on those teachings for myself in my life, and perhaps if you were a very successful disciple, you would one day be a rabbi and have your own disciples. You see, they understood a disciple was someone who had to give up much so that they could follow their master. A disciple was one that if a master said, we're going here, they said yes. It wasn't a matter of, do we really think we should go there? I think we should go over here. If the rabbi said, we're going, that's the direction they went. A disciple was subservient to, they chose to put themselves into the place of a servant to their master. So they would cook, prepare food, get the bedding right, make sure everything. If the master said that they were going to do something, go to this synagogue, they would go there. So a disciple is clearly defined as someone who follows after in a very narrow way. So a disciple is what the early church believed they were. They were disciples of Jesus. And so when we look at this, we kind of go, wow, well, now we have to be disciples. We have to change our branding, no longer call ourselves Christians. Who are you? I'm a disciple. And that could sound weird. But we don't, I'm not saying we should change the word Christian to disciple. But what I am saying is we should change internally within us. The understanding of that word Christian should reflect much more about what is a biblical disciple than what our world might broadly describe a Christian as. And because a disciple, there is so much about it, I just want to kind of bring one point to you today about what a disciple is. And I think this will help clarify. This is kind of the one. If you get this right, then everything else will flow out of it. It's one that Jesus spoke to his disciples about before he went to the cross. And so you can imagine, it's kind of one of those times where Jesus' mind was clarified on exactly what narrow point he wanted his disciples to do. Kind of like what the coach will do just before Queensland goes out and wins against New South Wales on Wednesday. He'll give them the last marching orders. You know, the most important thing is the last thing a coach says before the team goes out on the field. If there's everything, if you forget everything else, just do this one thing. And so Jesus at the Last Supper, the meal they had, the Passover meal, before he then went the following day to be crucified, he called his disciples around and he spoke to them and he said, my children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I am going, you cannot come. Now, Peter to this, he's all like, oh, Jesus, no, I want to follow you everywhere. I want to be wherever you go. I'll do whatever you want me to do. And Jesus is saying, thank you, Peter. Jesus, what Peter was doing was actually what he should have done as a disciple. You know, we might look at this and think, oh, Peter, because we know that what Peter actually then does, and Jesus explains, no, Peter, you're going to deny me. There's going to be like a 13-year-old girl. She's going to come and say, are you a follower of Jesus? And you're going to say, no. You're going to deny me three times, Peter. But at this point, Peter, in his intentions, he's saying, well, you're going somewhere. I want to follow you because I'm your disciple. So Peter was doing the right thing by saying, I'll go everywhere with you. But in the midst of this, Jesus wanted him to understand something greater. In verse 34, he goes on and says, a new command I give you, love one another as I've loved you. So you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Disciples could have kind of heard this and gone, wait a minute, we've heard about love before. You know, love's an Old Testament thing. You've been telling us to love forever. And we love people. We love our mums. We love our dads. We love our wives. We love our kids. We love our cars. We love our houses. We love chocolate. Some of us too much. You know, we love a heap of things. You know, why would Jesus say love is the kind of the central theme of being a disciple? Clearly, love, we all understand, we know, we can kind of become. But no, Jesus says, love one another as, this is the important part, he connects it to something much deeper and much more terrifying, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. He doesn't allow this broad expanse of love that we can just say, yeah, we love heaps of things. We even sometimes give tough love. You know, that's what some people need. They need tough love, so we give them that. Jesus is saying, no, it's not going to be broad, it's going to be narrow. What I want you to understand is that the love that you give and you show to one another is the kind of love that you've seen me give. And so he could have turned to Matthew and he's gone, Matthew, do you remember how I loved you when we first met? Matthew is a tax collector, a traitor to his nation. The guy who was taking money from Jewish people and giving it to Roman, the Roman authorities, but on the way through, he would skim off a bit for himself. And oftentimes, tax collectors skimmed way more than what they should have taken. And so Matthew was seen as a traitor to his people, hated by most Jewish people. And Jesus said, Jesus could have said, do you remember how I loved you, Matthew? Yeah. You asked me to be one of your followers. And then to the rest of the disciples, how did you guys treat Matthew? Yeah, we didn't want him around. We didn't want anything to do with him. But you brought him in and made him one of us. You loved in that way. And then what do we do? The first kind of night that we got together, oh yeah, we had that party with all of Matthew's friends, the tax collectors and sinners. Yeah, that was uncomfortable, to say the least. We'd never been around sinners before. But man, Jesus, you seem to love them. You seem to go out of your way to kind of mix in those circles. Man, that's the kind of way Jesus wants us to love. He could have gone to Nathaniel. You remember Nathaniel, how we met? Nathaniel's like, oh yeah, under that tree, and you saw me and you said about me that I'm a Hebrew of Hebrews, and then what did you say about my people, Nathaniel? Oh, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Oh, yeah, that was a bit kind of awkward. And what did I do for you, Nathaniel, after you said that? You welcomed me in. You asked me to follow you. You asked me to be one of your disciples. Yeah, that's right. That's how I loved. Or how about that day that I did that sermon, the vampire sermon? You all remember it? And they're like, oh, that was a terrible one. Drink my blood, eat my flesh. Man, that was the worst sermon ever, Jesus. You should not have said that one. And that day, you guys, you know, everyone was leaving. You wanted to leave too. Yeah, it's a good point. We were kind of thinking about leaving. And what did I do? You forgave us. Even when we were about to walk away, you called us back. You wanted us to be part of your family. Love one another as I have loved you. That's how we're meant to love. It's terrifying, really, when we put it that way, right? That to be a disciple, we're actually called to love like Jesus loved. What would that look like if that was our reality? If we love truly in the way that Jesus loved the people of his day? What would change in our lives if we loved that way? If that was the example of love that we followed every day? I would imagine if all Christians around the world, just for a week, loved in that way, then the world would be a different place. If all Christians around the world loved like that always, we wouldn't have World War I or World War II, right? Like when you look at the countries that were involved, and if we loved in that way, we would be so attractive to people from the outside looking in. They would see the love that was here. They would look at that and say, man, that is something that's revolutionary to the world we live in. That is so different. That is something that I don't see outside. A kind of love that doesn't judge, that isn't pushing away, but it's actually inclusive. The kind of love that's so diverse in the way that it reaches out, that it moves people to look and see, wow, these guys are a light. They are different in the community. And we see this in the early church. We see that the early church grew and grew and grew throughout the Roman Empire till the point that they ended up being the religion of the Roman Empire. It kind of took over the Roman Empire, not because of they took out their swords and they said, you've got to believe what I believe, but the early church grew through persecution and trial. They grew because as they went, they loved like Jesus loved. And in the end, it spread and spread and spread throughout the whole empire, bringing down, really, many believe, the Roman Empire because of the way that people shifted the way they lived to being loving. What would it mean for us to move this word Christian and to be defined by the word disciple? To love like Jesus loved, how would that affect our lives? How would that affect our relationships with other people? How would it reflect the way that we deal with people who are difficult to live with? And how would it affect people who would see us from the outside? Not doing it so that they would change, although that would be awesome if they did. Not doing it to fix her or him, you know. I'll do that if my husband changes. No. But if we instead did it because that's what a disciple is, that's what a Christian is, that's what we're called to be, that's the natural step forward that we should take if we're really truly to be defined by this word Christian, and if that word really means to be a disciple of Jesus. Jesus said, what way should we love? We'll love just like he has loved us. And that's my challenge for this week, that you can just take away and say, okay, well, this week I'm just going to try love for 1 week only. And hopefully if that kind of works out well for you, maybe you'll do it for a lifetime. But just this week, think, how can I love like Jesus loved? What would that change in my life? Let's pray. Lord, I do ask that you'd equip us for this, because it's a challenge we don't naturally do by ourselves. We know that your Spirit can do incredibly mighty things and powerful things in our lives. We know that you've done that in us. You've loved us so much. And we pray that you'd help us to be able to multiply that love and give it out to people in our lives that we interact with this week. But bring it back to our minds, Lord, as we go through our week. Bring it into our hearts. May our consciences be pricked every time we don't do it. Help us, Lord, to be better parents because of it, better friends, that we might be better husbands and wives. We might be better children to our parents. As we look to serve you and love you in this way, that we might follow your commands, that we might follow your ways. We ask this, Jesus, in your holy and mighty name. Amen. Amen.